Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and each week I explore the latest in a spiritual revolution that's happening in this country. And a lot of what's coming to us is held in these ancient artifacts, which tonight's guest will talk about. His name is Stephen Mailer. He is an alternative Egyptologist, and he's been involved with the Crystal Skulls since 1979, and he's going to be a featured part of a big Crystal Skull event that I'm doing in New York on October 10th of this year, along with ARE and Oracle Productions out of Arizona. So we're doing this on that weekend. If you want more information about that, you can go to newrealities.com and look for the Crystal Skull banner there. Stephen, thanks for being a guest tonight.
Thank you, Alan. It's great to talk to you tonight.
Yeah, so I'm very excited about this conference coming up, because what we're going to do is have as many of these ancient crystal skulls in the same place at the same time. We want to set some kind of record. I mean, but I want to give people a background about the value of these skulls, what information they hold, and how people can use them. So, that's why I thought I'd call you. Can you?
Certainly.
So give us a little background about, like, what's the tradition and what kind of energies do these skulls hold in them?
Wow. Well, first of all, you know, my involvement and interest, as you said, I have a background as an archaeologist, a prehistorian. And I was involved at this time in 1979 working for the Rosicrucian Order, AMARC, in San Jose, California. That's the initials AMRC, which stands for Ancient Mystical Order Rosicrucis. And in my capacity as a staff research scientist, some photographs were brought to our attention in the research lab. And they were from a man who was living in San Jose, California, who was at that time working as a business agent for some poor people in Mexico. So as it turned out, these photographs were of a crystal skull. Now, at that time, 1979, I had heard about these items, I had read about them in a book, but knew very little, to be sure. So this was my first experience. We then got this person to actually bring this crystal skull into the Rosicrucian Research Laboratories, and were able to test it. So I was able to start out my work in a scientific setting. And I have the ability, which is why, probably why you called me tonight, is it just happens because of certain people passing away, that I'm probably one of the senior researchers in the field now.
Right.
I was trained.
Right. There was Nick Nocerino, who was really popularized the skulls. But before we get to that, I'm interested in the Rosicrucian research. Can you what is that about? Scientific research in the Rosicrucians?
Well, it would mean involved having a whole discussion of the Rosicrucian Order. The second book I wrote is about Egypt is called From Light into Darkness, The Evolution of Religion in Ancient Egypt. I became a scholar and an archivist when I worked for the Rosicrucian Order, and I'll explain who they are in a second, but I was able to trace the order back to ancient Egypt. Most people who know about the Rosicrucian Order know it as a metaphysical organization, like the Freemasons, that began in the Middle Ages. Some people think, some pseudo-historians will say, believe it began in the 17th century in Germany and in England. However, I have traced it as probably the longest documented and extant metaphysical organization in the West that goes back to ancient Egypt.
What was it called, though, in ancient Egypt? Because the Rose Cross, that's a very Christian term, so it must have had a different manifestation somehow in Egypt.
But it is false to think of it as a Christian organization, because it's not. To be that it arose out of Christianity, so you're correct. The Rosy Cross, the Rose and the Cross. But it happens to be that the cross in Egypt predates Christianity by at least 2,000 years.
Do you mean so, the Ankh, the image of the Ankh, or the actual cross?
Even the regular cross. I can show you in the Egyptian site of Saqqara, which goes back 5,000 years, hieroglyph on the wall that goes back to 3000 BC of a cross. Regular cross, not an ach, a cross.
So really?
The cross itself as a symbol is an ancient metaphor. Yes, what it means is, it means the union of the spiritual and the physical.
Right.
You know, the sense where the cross meets is supposed to be the heart or the seat of the soul, and that's what the rose represents. In the West, the blooming rose represents an emerging soul coming into consciousness. The same symbol in the East is the lotus.
Well, you know what's so weird? I just got back from England where I stood in the latest crop circle that was a cross. It was a three-dimensional cross. Have you seen that?
I have seen some of the recent crop circles, and they are solid geometry. It's unbelievable.
Well, this was a cross. I was in the middle of this three-dimensional.
I know the one you're talking about, yes. And it comes out being like a hologram.
I mean, the cross then, yeah, so it was a symbol of the union of, I'm just trying to absorb it, the spirit and the body meeting in this time-space dimension. Would you say that?
And the center, the blooming, is the soul emerging into consciousness, which the Rosicrucians adopted the rose, which I believe does go back to ancient Egypt. But in the East, it is the lotus. The blooming lotus is the soul unconsciousness. And the Rosicrucians adopted the rosy cross. So it became an organization in the grips of Christianity, but it is not a Christian organization. In fact, if one knows the true history of the Rosicrucian order, the Rosicrucians were put to death in the Inquisition just as much as witches and other things. The Rosicrucians were actually hunted and persecuted by the Jesuits, so they were the enemies.
What was it called in Egypt at that time?
It was not a name that we would know now. It becomes the following of a particular king who also is connected to the origins of Judaism. So this is a long story that we're getting into my second book.
Okay.
But it's a thing that has a title, Akhenaten.
I see.
So they would have been called Atenists, or followers of the Aten. In those days, Rosicrucian.
That's interesting, because I thought it was the Masons that actually traced their way back to Egypt.
Not exactly. The Masons evolved out of the Rosicrucians. That's obviously my bias, because that's my background. But the Masons, the Knights Templar, later the Illuminati and other groups that have come today, all evolved out of the Rosicrucian order.
I mean, I know we're getting a little off the subject, but I am fascinated by these secret societies.
Really not off the subject, because all of these organizations, turns out, had crystal skulls. The Rosicrucian order, the Knights Templars, supposedly had a crystal skull. Nick Nocerino, who you mentioned, I do want to mention, go back, just to say that my status in this is that I was trained by the two giants in the field. As you mentioned, Mr. F.R. Nick Nocerino, who there was not anyone who knew more about crystal skulls, who did more crystal skull research than he did. He founded in New York City in 1944 an organization called the Society of Crystal Skulls International. He further incorporated the organization in California in 1945. In the early 50s, he was the first person in California to receive a teaching credential in parapsychology. And the other person who I got involved with the Rosicrucian Order was the great Dr. Marcel Vogel. He was a PhD in chemistry, a senior scientist at IBM, and the Rosicrucian.
Wow, so you got these both. You're the holder of these two great modern traditions, in a way, these crystal.
Nicely said. I appreciate that statement.
I think it's great that you're going to be at our conference being a big keynote, because people are coming to not just see the skulls, but feel the energy. So, I mean, I think being involved with the Rosicrucian,
the energy is
sensitive. So talk a little bit about how it all works. What do the crystal skulls hold in them that makes them so fascinating?
Well, the key to me and my emphasis, and that will actually be the presentation that I will be giving at the conference, is what we call the ancient crystal skulls. Now, again, Nick Nocerino was the one who approached the subject from a scientific standard. He established the standard. He set what we call a tripartite or three-part classification system of crystal skulls. Now, what is a crystal skull? Basically, it is any crystal-type object, usually quartz crystals, or clear quartz or smoky quartz, but can be any gemstone. We've seen them in ruby and quartz, in jade, in lapis, things like that. But usually in quartz, it is an object that is carved in the shape of a human skull. Mainly stylistic, not accurate. However, there have been some that are very good anatomical studies, particularly in modern times.
I see, but the ancient ones are not necessarily...
Never intended to be. No, just stylistic.
How many How many ancient ones actually are there? That's been a big controversy.
It is the controversy, and it is why I'm giving my presentation. Let me finish the classification.
Okay, good.
We would call a contemporary skull is one, a piece of crystal that has been carved into shape of a skull for the last 50 to 100 years.
And so, with a machine, with a modern machine.
Exactly, and they can be discovered to be that, and I will explain that. With modern methods, we can discover a modern carving with modern lapidary diamond tips tools. Now, what we would call an old skull is one that may be a couple hundred years old, older than 100 years. Could be machine carved, could also be hand carved. But what we classify, and this is Nick Dosorino's classification, as an ancient crystal skull is an object that has been carved into a skull shape over 1,000 years ago. Now, with that classification, myself being an archaeologist and working with artifacts that go back many, many years, there can be different layers of what we call an ancient skull. For example, a skull that was carved 1,001 years ago would be classified as an ancient crystal skull. But we have seen some, I have seen some, that may have been carved over 5,000 years ago, even over that. So the layers of ancient skull. Now, the theme of the conference, there's a two-part theme to our conference, and as you mentioned, this is a series of conferences that have been put on by Oracle Stone Productions and Kendall Ray Morgan, and I can give the website before we're done for the conference. They started 9909. They're doing now 10-10-10. They're going to do 11-11-2011, and of course 12-12-2012. So it's a series of conferences to coincide with the Mayan calendar. 2012, of course, the Mayan calendar. We'll talk about that. Yes. And so they have the theme of the original 13 skulls. I'm going to discuss that. The other part of the conference is a dedication to the work of Nick Dosorino. So the conference is two parts. It's going to talk about the idea of the theme of original 13 original skulls and dedicated to Nick Dosorino. Now, the idea of 13 skull. Okay.
Good.
This has come along particularly in the last 10 years. Now, before the 1980s, there was no one stalking publicly of crystal skulls. There were several books out. The only skull that was known of before that time is the most famous, most controversial, which is known as the Mitchell Hedges crystal skull. The most books have been written about, most television shows, and it is the most controversial. And it is the one that I'm going to declare at the conference, and I've declared in my book that I wrote with, I actually wrote a book on the subject with David Hatchett Childress. It's called The Crystal Skulls, Astonishing Portals to Man's Past. It's on Adventures Unlimited Press. And in the book, I reveal that we believe that skull is not ancient. The most famous one, the one people think is the most ancient, is not ancient.
I thought Mitchell Hedges found it in Mexico in an ancient archaeological site.
Absolutely not. No evidence whatsoever of that claim. And Mitchell Hedges himself never claimed that.
Oh, really?
His autobiography published in 1954, the man passed in 1959. He never declared how he obtained the skull. Well, we now know how he obtained the skull at an auction at Sotheby's in London in December of 1943. He did not have the skull before then.
It's a beautiful skull. I mean, it's a...
I worked with it.
Yeah.
It has tremendous in it. Now, listen, let me make it clear because I'm leading to that point. Why we say about the ancient skulls, all crystal is ancient.
Right.
All crystal is ancient. Now, a skull that could have been carved yesterday. In other words, if I would go to a store, pick out a mother piece of crystal, have somebody carve it to a lapidary situation, and have a skull right now, it is still powerful. It still is tremendous. It can still be used, and we'll discuss how the skulls were used.
Right.
So all crystal is ancient, all crystal is powerful. The Mitchell Hedges skull is one of the most powerful crystal skulls I've ever come across.
Mm-hmm.
It is tremendous. It is almost a pure optical grade quartz. In other words, almost clear as glass. There is only one occlusion in that skull at the top of the head. It takes only a skilled observation to see it. It looks like it's glass. Beautiful skull, tremendous power, tremendous energy, but it may have been carved less than 150 years ago.
Well, the thing that I'm also interested in, we'll get to all this, is that if this was carved, you know, 1,000 years ago or before there were machines, how and who carved these things without a machine?
This is why we are interested in the ancient skulls. All crystal is ancient. All crystal has power. But we say with the ancient skulls, it is the intent of the carver. I have to repeat it, always do. It is the intent of the carver. These ancient ones were carved by master shamans. Master. Put their energy, their consciousness in it. They were used. They were carved by hand. They were carved by hand. Many different techniques have come to us through what we call scrying or crystal gazing or psychometry, the techniques we use. Now, I can go into detail how we actually work in the laboratory with these things.
I'm interested in that. We have time. You could go into some detail.
Certainly. Well, I did that with the Rosicrucian Order, and it's what Nick Nocerino established. You have what's known in crystals, what the ancient term is called scrying. You can't even find it in the dictionary. It is in Wikipedia, but if you look in the Webster's, you can't find the word scrying anymore. It is a common term, crystal gazing. It is what we think of the gypsy who looks in the crystal ball and tells you your future. Well, what it is actually interacting the mind with the crystal. As Nick Nocerino taught us, if you have a piece of crystal, say like the Mitchell Hedges crystal skull, which is clear, like glass, you have to fog it to be able to see scenes in it. So you interact with your mind, actually fogs the crystal, and you see things in it. With a cloudy quartz crystal like those we worked with, you have to clear it to see scenes in it. So the idea of scrying and crystal gazing is actually working with a piece of crystal and seeing things in it. Actually seeing things and then describing what you see. The other technique, which was founded by a great American parapsychologist, in fact, he's called the father of parapsychology, Professor J.B. Ryan of Duke University, who established the whole field of parapsychology at Duke University in the 30s. Right. He developed a term which we call psychometry. Well, what is psychometry? Psychometry involves a person. Now, let's clear something up also first. When I worked with the Rosicrucian Order, I tested people professionally. This is why I have experience in the field. We never used the word psychic. We hated the word psychic.
Okay.
Because the word psychic intimates. You say, oh, she's psychic, he's psychic, I'm not. They have something you don't. No. We use the word, and it's used in metaphysical fields and in teachings, sensitive. Huh. There's a word. We know that word. We're all sensitive, right?
Right.
To different degrees. So the people who develop a sensitivity at a young age, like a Nick Nocerino, and develop these techniques and get nurtured with these abilities, they become your so-called professional psychics. People who channel, people who write books, people who do it for a living.
Right.
Others, sometimes because of family, because of religion, because of school, these abilities are dampened. You know, Jenny, you don't really have an invisible playmate that you're talking with. That's just fantasy. Forget it.
Okay,
and some people bite down on these things.
What?
They lose the ability that they don't develop it.
I know. I've done shows on that. But get to the science. I mean, how does the science, what's your science? I mean, where's science interact with?
Okay, well, the point is, I just wanted to explain what is psychometry.
Right.
Psychometry is something that you're working with an object that may be an unknown.
Right.
In other words, no history on it. And the only way to come up with information is some psychic connection from the object itself, getting impressions, ideas. It also, when we test people, to test them in a laboratory, you do with knowns. You do with something you know the history of to see how good somebody is.
Okay.
So now let's tell you how we work with a crystal skull in the laboratory. We have people who come in, have a session with the skull. We do different things like we use sound, we use color, and different light to work with the skulls to see if people get impressions. Now we get people to work with it, tell you what they say and they feel. It's recorded, audio recorded, video recorded. Then afterward, and of course, no one is present at anyone else's session. This is science. So then we have them fill out a questionnaire. You fill out a questionnaire, what scene did you see, what color was predominant, et cetera, et cetera, prearranged questions that have known to work. Then you score it, and you get what we call hits. Now, what J.B. Ryan worked on his field, what he discovered, anything that is above a 50% hit is just what we call statistically relevant. It cannot be attributed to chance.
Okay.
Usually I like to go 60 or 70%. To see if someone has that kind of hit.
So tell us some of the things that happened when you brought these crystal skulls into the lab. What did you discover?
People would see Mayan scenes, see jungle sounds, 80% hits, 85% hits. So this is why the first skull that I worked with, which was brought into the Rosicrucian Research Lab in January 1980, Nick Nocerino's group had worked with beforehand, and they called it the Mayan crystal skull. Because the overwhelming majority of people saw Mayan scenes in it. In fact, the overwhelming majority of crystal skulls that we can talk about have been associated with either Mexico or Central America, either the Maya or Aztec cultures.
Okay, now what skull is that? What's that skull called today?
Which one?
The Mayan one, the first skull.
It is called the Mayan crystal skull, and it has disappeared.
It has? Oh.
Yes. These skulls, the first two skulls I worked with were being brought in by a Mayan priest, a man who claimed that he was a Mayan priest. And he claimed he was given permission from his brotherhood, the Mayan clan that rules crystal skulls, known as the Jaguar clan. And they said that he could release some of these artifacts, sell them, in other words, to Westerners to bring money in to feed starving villages in Mexico. We had people investigate it. It seemed like there was an accuracy to the story. So he was bringing in artifacts. Obviously, they had gotten them from tombs where they didn't alert the Mexican authorities or the Mexican archaeologists. And this is a whole long story if we get into the politics of archaeology, right? Because sometimes the Mexican authorities are more the tomb robbers than are what we think are tomb robbers, et cetera, et cetera. And so anyway, this gentleman was bringing these skulls in. So Nick Nocerino's group named it the Mayan Crystal Skull. The second one he brought in was one of pure amethyst, which we titled the Amethyst Crystal Skull.
And was that from Mexico, too?
Yes, it was from the Oaxaca area of Mexico, in fact. I think associated with a group we call the Olmecs. Very mysterious group.
And was that human size as well?
It was about the size of a child's skull, about a 12-year-old. It was 8 pounds of amethyst. The first one was about 10 pounds of cloudy quartz, almost full adult size.
Now, did you yourself tune into it psychically and get any impressions?
Absolutely.
Tell us.
What I got is one of the things that I was actually leading to, so we'll go circular here and come back to what I was talking about.
Okay.
Nobody talked about this, but I and other people who work with these skulls did see a scene. This scene is at least 85% to 90% reported by people who work. We would see a circle of 12 skulls, 12 crystal skulls with a master 13th skull in the center. I even saw the 12 skulls in different colors, a ruby red, a lapis blue, a jade or emerald green, a citrine golden yellow, et cetera, et cetera. 12 different colors with a master skull in the center. Nick Nocerino started to lecture about these things in the 80s, the first one who ever gave a public lecture on the subject. He talked about his students seeing this scene of 13. There was no story of 13 original, just 13 in a circle. All of a sudden, these stories become morphing, and they become morphing, and it's now become urban legend. And now the story that's going to be at the conference is that there is so-called Mayan legend that there were 13 original ancient Mayan skulls that have to come together before December 21st, 2012, to save humanity.
Well, okay. So do we have 13 skulls that can come together? I mean, are they available?
I think they're sets of 13. That's the point. I don't believe the legend that they're 13 original skulls. And somebody says, what's original? How far back are we going? I can talk about two crystal skulls, Max and Shana Ra. Shana Ra will be at this conference, was Nick Nocerino's skull. This is the one that we have direct provenance of. The mystery of the crystal skulls is their legends, their stories. They get handed down with all sorts of stories. They came from here, they came from there. But as we talk about in archaeology, we talk about provenance. What is provenance? That means when you're on an archaeological site and you uncover an artifact, it's immediately recorded. People witness. The whole group witnesses. Photographs are taken. People attest to the find. An artist draws it, et cetera, et cetera. Then you have what's called a chain of custody in archaeology. The artifact is then documented as it moves every step of the way to either private hands or to a museum or to a university.
Well, so actually, isn't it illegal to take anything into private hands from an archaeological site?
Since 1972, but not before then.
Oh, I see. So if Nick Nocerino got the skull before that,
In 1972, the UN was forced by political reasons to pass what are now known as international antiquity laws, that an archaeological artifact found in any country in the world, it is the property of that country.
Anyway, I've met Shana Ra, who was Nick Nocerino, and I've met Max as well.
So now you know the real one, see?
You're saying Max is an old ancient skull, too, from the mine?
Say, too, that Max and Shana Ra were carved as skulls well over 5,000 years ago.
How do they know? How do they carbon date a crystal? How do they know how old?
You cannot. This is not science. This is not physics. This is metaphysics.
Oh, I see. So they tuned in and they just felt it was 5,000 years old.
Both of them have told me that. So that's what you asked me if I tuned into the skulls. Shana Ra is a record keeper. Example, the ancient skulls were so old they were before writing. Crystal skulls were the first computers. We'll talk science. I'll give you Marcel Vogel.
Okay.
How crystal stores information. But I'm saying to you now, this is the power of the ancient skulls. They were the original computers. Crystals can record the vibration of every person, every incident, every event that happens around them.
Okay.
So a skull like Max and Shana Ra have what you could call beyond terabytes, millions and millions of bits of information have been stored in these skulls. When I started to work with Shana Ra, I knew I would not have the lifetime left to document all the information that there is in Shana Ra. So Shana Ra is going to be handed down, hopefully, but it is a record keeper. Max also was a record keeper, but Max was specifically used also to do great healing, and the Mayans used Max for a tremendous amount of healing.
Well, maybe we can get Max at the conference also. Maybe we should talk.
Not this year, maybe next.
Really? What?
Joanne Parks is the most active crystal skull custodian and guardian. She is booked well a year in advance.
Oh,
was booked in 2019. Now she's booking for 2011.
Really? Too bad, because it'd be great to have Max there, wouldn't it?
They were once together. Now, we did a series of crystal skull conferences in Sedona, Arizona, in the late 90s that were put on by Dr. Chet Snow. Nick was there with Joanne in 1998, so Max and Shana Ra have been together at the conference, and they work together. They do work together. So the idea of bringing the skulls together, this is why the conference is so exciting. The idea whether there was a legend of 13 original or not is irrelevant. The fact that is that they do work together, they bring themselves together, and I can explain that to you. So you take like an ancient crystal skull, like a Max and Shana Ra, which you have seen.
Yes.
I say they are like mainframe computers. If we take another piece of crystal, like I said, a crystal skull that's carved yesterday, we put it next to Max and Shana Ra, the little one is like a laptop remote. It happens to be a law of nature that a higher concentration, this is something in physics and chemistry and biology, it's a law of nature, that something of a higher concentration always tends to go to a lower concentration. In other words, the terms use homeostasis, equilibrium. Nature, everything in us, a physical human system, is always trying to tend towards a balance. We never achieve that balance because that would be death, but we're always tending towards a balance. We don't ever want to go to an extreme one way or another way. So the same is with crystals. If a crystal is older, it has more energy, it has more knowledge, it will immediately start to download. To a what we say, a younger crystal, so to speak.
Oh, I see. Let me just get that. So these ancient crystal skulls will transfer their vibrational information to another crystal skull, or even a new crystal skull?
Yes.
But then how do you access that? Let's say there's billions of bits of information.
We have those techniques were taught by both Dr. Marcel Vogel and Mr. F.R. Nocerino. Nick Nocerino. I will demonstrate these things, and it's very easy. Anybody can do it. You don't have to be practiced, but it has to do with getting your mind into a meditative state. And if you're a meditator, then it's easy. But it's something like having to quiet the mind, deep breathing, and working. Actually, Marcel Vogel demonstrated a technique of what he said to go actually into the skull by doing a series of breathing, technically almost like Tibetan breathing. You actually... And it's a Rosicrucian technique. The Rosicrucian teach a technique called projection. We actually send your consciousness anywhere. Anywhere in the universe. Anywhere in the world. Anywhere in the universe. Anywhere in any dimension.
Well, because consciousness is non-local, so consciousness is an aspect. But the thing about the skulls that I find fascinating is that there must be something, because it's in the shape of a human skull, there's a resonance in form that connects to our human skull. Isn't that
true? Very good. Very good. That's question 1A, usually when we get questions. Why a skull? Okay. A couple of reasons. You hit on one very good point. If the skulls were used as the ancient computers to store information, where is the organ in our body stored that mainly stores information? The brain. Now, we also know that our cells do. Many of us know, and this is becoming a regular accepted science now, not just metaphysics, that we have cellular memory. Actually, there is memory in every one of our nucleus of every cell. But the brain is the main organ in the body that stores information and memory. So obviously, that's one reason why a skull, to store information. Another reason, and it's very interesting when I've worked with crystal skulls, even with some people with the Rosicrucian order, even Rosicrucians who were trained to be mystics would have a reaction. That's the first skull I talked about, the Mayan crystal skull. Some people with great sensitivity were afraid of it. They received some negative vibration, and they were scared. Well, it happens to be, in our construct, Judeo-Christian-Islamic construct, a skull is a symbol of death.
It's obvious it's a symbol of death, right?
Because not the ancients, no. Only, as I said, Judeo-Christian-Islamic. No. Pre-Judeo, Mayan people Aztec people, Olmec people, saw the skull as a symbol of eternity, of infinity. They didn't fear death. Neither did the Egyptians. They saw everything as just a change in form, continuing to go on. In fact, as I teach, as I learned from my indigenous Egyptian teacher, my master, there was no word in the ancient Egyptian language for death. The word was westing, or going to the west, just changing form. So to the ancient people, a skull would have been a symbol of eternity. And here's an interesting medical fact that I always bring out, and people are fascinated by this. When they cremate a body, the whole body is not melted, because the skull, we know this, any physical anthropologist or archaeologist out there is going to resonate to what I'm saying. A skull, and particularly the skull and the long bones of our body, do not melt at 10,000 degrees
Fahrenheit. They don't become dust or ashes.
When we get cremains from a cremation center, it is pulverized. The skull is not burned and the long bones are not burned. What they then do is pulverize it to give you somebody's cremains to store in an urn.
Oh, I see.
Archaeology, we can find 5-million-year-old skulls.
Wait, let me just take that in. So you're saying that the skull doesn't disintegrate? Does it in fire?
I'm saying to you, we have found in the ground 4 and 5 million-year-old skulls. I mean, it takes a long time for a skull to deteriorate in the archaeological record.
So is that the reason they could be seen as a symbol of eternity?
Yes. Do you know alchemy? Do you know your alchemy?
Yes, I do know some alchemy, yes.
Skull would be the symbol of the fixed salt.
Okay. I don't know it that well, but I know there's like 7 steps to the alchemical process.
It is that symbol of permanence. You're right. And that is what the ancients saw it as, something that would last. And certainly these skulls have lasted. I mean, first of all, quartz is a very durable mineral to begin with. So you carve a skull out of quartz, there's a good chance it could last a very long time if it doesn't get dropped or broken or destroyed.
Okay, so let's go back. So let's say these maybe are 5,000 years old. Who did it, and what was the intent that were put in these ancient skulls? And what gift does it have for us today?
The reason why the power is so great in the ancient ones, the intent of the carver, master shaman, master sculptor, it gets attracted. In other words, you're talking about, if you want a culture, I say, like Max, Shannara were carved by the Olmecs. As I was starting to say, we don't really know who the Olmecs were. The Maya, first of all, the Mayan daykeepers, shamans themselves, say they go back much further than Western archaeology, Mayan archaeologists will give them credit for. Even Don Alejandro, who's going to be at this conference, brings the Maya back to 4,000 BC and earlier. I mean, that's 6,000 years. Archaeology doesn't date the Maya that old. But they do know that the Olmec were older. They do believe that the Maya evolved out of the Olmec. But the Olmec are a very mysterious culture that is very poorly known. My co-author and publisher, David Hatcher Childress, wrote an excellent book about the Olmec. I believe the Olmec go back over 10,000 years, and that some of these skulls were carved by hand, masters using diamond tools, but by hand, and polishing with water and with a diamond grit.
Would that go back to Atlantis? Do you get into the Atlantis question as well?
Well, this is the point. Again, part of this urban myth is these original 13 skulls to the Maya came from Atlantis.
Okay. Let me just take that in before you go on. So you're saying that Atlantis, I believe it existed. I believe it existed in the Atlantic Ocean. I believe it was the bridge between Egypt and Central America and those cultures. I think part of the knowledge went to Egypt, part of it went to the Mayans and the Olmecs, and it sunk about 10,000 years ago. So if these skulls go back to Atlantis, what do they tell us of the time, and still it's their original intention? You know?
Yes.
And part of my information I do get from David Chilton Hatteras. I think he has done some great research on all this.
Yes. He's what you call a diffusionist like I am, meaning that we believe that all ancient cultures were in contact. Now, I have to tread lightly here. Let me say that because you don't know what I've written in my books, I have a whole chapter in my first book, Land of Osiris, called Kemet and the Myth of Atlantis. We call the civilization Kemet, because it wasn't Egypt. Egypt's a Greek word. The ancient was Kemet, or Kemet, where the word alchemy comes from. Alchem is an Arabic term for Egypt today.
Doesn't it mean black earth, actually?
Black land. Yes, the black land, absolutely.
Right.
Now, quickly, I'll just make this long story short.
It's fascinating. I'm really fascinated by your knowledge.
I first addressed the subject of Atlantis to my Egyptian teacher, who passed away in 2008 at the age of 82. I worked with him for 16 years. His name was Abdel Hakim Awiyam. Everybody knew him as Hakim. He was the tour guide of a lot of famous people, Barbara Hand Clow, Greg Braden, John Anthony West, Nikki Scully, all used Hakim as a tour guide. He was the senior tour guide. He was an active tour guide for 56 years. But he was an indigenous wisdom keeper. He was a master of the oral tradition of his country, the tradition, the histories that were kept long before writing. So when I first broached the subject of Atlantis with him, he rejected the concept completely. Why? He said it was a racist concept. This is how he explained it. It's intimating that a dying continent of enlightened white people left their continent, came to Africa and other people, places of the world, and taught ignorant people of color how to build pyramids and have civilization.
Well, I heard that they actually weren't white people. They were
exactly.
Red people.
Actually, Edgar Cayce described them as copper-colored. But right. That is the point. The point is, it is racist.
And that actually part of them actually went to the Indus Valley to start the Hindu civilization as well. The right. Lemurians and the Atlanteans.
Was already there 10,000 years ago. The ancient civilization in Kemet was already there 65,000 years ago. So the point is that we talk about cycles. This is a major part of my teaching. Cycles, not Darwinian linear evolution. I'm known as a paradigm buster. The one paradigm I most want to see flushed down the toilet is this idea of linear evolution, that we move from the primitive to the complex in a straight line. It is utter nonsense. Everything in nature moves in cycles. Everything that exists is in cycles. So has human history. We've gone from high civilization to low civilization, high civilization to low civilization. So we are taught by the indigenous wisdom keepers of Egypt that over 10,000 years ago, everybody in the planet was in the cycle of high enlightenment. So if there was an Atlantis, if there was an involved civilization, island continent, and I agree there may have been, because we talk about in my second book, a worldwide cataclysm that occurred 11,500 years ago, where there is numerous documentation in a book called Cataclysm 9500 BC by two British scientists, Allen and Dallaire. It was published by Barbara Hand Clow. She then wrote what I consider her best book after that called Catastrophobia, talking about the cataclysm worldwide 11,500 years ago, source of the flood myth, source of the Atlantis myth. Okay. But the idea was, if that civilization went down and they went to Africa, they already were building pyramids in Africa, they already were in a high state of civilization, they only joined in with their cousins who they may have been in contact before. They did not. The pyramids of Egypt were not built by Atlanteans, and they were not built by extraterrestrials. Ooh. They were built by indigenous Africans.
How did they get their knowledge to build the Great Pyramid?
Knowledge came because we were in a higher state of consciousness.
Oh, I see. So what about, didn't the Atlanteans go to Egypt after their continent sunk?
If it did, there's no direct evidence of this. Now, you're just talking about mythology.
Of course.
If they did, yes, they just became part of the Comitian civilization.
But
that is the story that they could have gone.
But Edgar Cayce says that the Atlanteans went to Egypt. Rata.
So says, if you read the earlier readings of Rata, people only read the readings of Rata when he talks about the Great Pyramid 10,500 years ago. But I was interviewed last week by the Edgar Cayce Foundation. In fact, they are the ones putting on this conference.
Yes.
So let people know this conference is being put on by the Edgar Cayce Foundation, New York City, ARE. So I was interviewed by the Edgar Cayce people last night, and we talked about that. If you go back and read all the Ra-Ta readings, he talks about an earlier incarnation of Ra-Ta where he was in Egypt 50,000 years ago.
I see. But anyway, okay, so we got Egypt. There's so much to say about Egypt, but if we go back to the crystal skulls, and if, let's say, they were Atlantean, what was their original purpose? And then they'd have to be older than 5,000 years old. They'd have to be at least 10,000 years old.
I think Max is older than 10,000 years.
Right. Okay, maybe they are. Shana Ra definitely has a shape of a head that we don't see today. I mean,
right. Again, if you, I wrote about it in the book. If you actually superimpose a skull of an ancient hominid, which is known as Homo erectus, which is supposed to be one of our early ancestors, it is exactly what Shana-Ra is. So here's the conundrum. Now, then that would give, now I'm going to talk about there. In fact, there are the modern anthropologists are attacking now, saying all the skulls are modern. I have to get to that. But that actually gives fuel to the fact. If Shana-Ra is the skull of an ancient artifact Homo erectus, well, we've only known about Homo erectus in the last 100 years. So that would give you, well, maybe Shana-Ra has to then been carved in the last 100 years. But the fact is, if you investigate Shana-Ra, you see no evidence of Vance tool work. In fact, it looks like completely carved by hand. You can see evidence that it was carved by hand. So that means if Shana-Ra is as old as we say it is, the people who carved Shana-Ra were aware of this ancient hominid Homo erectus.
Or maybe they were them. Maybe
a million years ago.
Maybe they were the Homo erectus that carved it, you're saying. And my skull may be a million years old, you're saying, the crystal skull.
Possibly. It may be that they knew that the fact that they were in the highest state of consciousness, they may have already known all of human history, all of evolution on the planet, that we have had to. I say today, one of my things that I teach when I teach is we are only relearning today that which we once knew. And that was the teaching of my master. We're only relearning today that which we once knew. We think cellular phones, we think microwaves, we think nuclear energy, we think this is all in advance. No, the Great Pyramid was a free energy device producing microwaves, electromagnetism, quantum waves, radio waves, and hydrogen gas over 10,000 years ago, and it was all free energy. We are doing nothing new today.
Right. I agree with you, and I think that's a great point to make. But why were these skulls carved originally?
The ancients wanted a ritual item. In other words, we were in a state of consciousness where we communicated telepathically. We were in the highest state of consciousness. But there were those shamans, those that we say still in the maintain that highest state of enlightenment, if you will, who said perhaps we need tools and devices. We are a tool species. That is what makes us human. We invent tools, we do tools. No matter what state of consciousness we're in the lowest state, we'll use a stick to dig. We're in the highest state, we'll use a pneumatic drill.
But what you're just saying, I just got the insight, is perhaps they carved these skulls in this heightened state in order to pass on to later generations that heightened state of consciousness that the skull would contain. So people
are... Possibly, my friend.
Yes.
Maybe the reason we are gathering in these conferences to bring them together. It is the regurgitating of the tribes. What my teacher taught us is there is the myth of Osiris. Just quickly, I'll tell it.
No, please, please.
That Osiris was torn into pieces by his jealous brother Set. Plutarch said 14 pieces. The original story is 42 pieces. Because there were 42 original tribes of Kemet. They were all races, all peoples who are on the planet today and who have ever been on the planet. 42. The story of Osiris is the tribes are scattered. It's almost like the Tower of Babel story, where God confuses everybody by giving us different languages. The idea is we all had one language at one time. We could all communicate. But then we have all these different languages and we're in confusion. Same here. The 42 tribes are scattered with a piece of Osiris to one day come back together with their piece of Osiris and become what the concept that my master taught me was called the Sesh, S-E-S-H, just means the people. Doesn't mean white, brown, black, red, pink, yellow. Doesn't mean Jew, Christian, Muslim, or Buddhist. It meant just the people. So this is what the crystal skulls are. This is the message of the Maya. This is the message of the conferences. You hit it right on the nose. They put these things in the skulls for us today to raise our consciousness, to come back together, to be the human race again.
So when all these skulls come together, I'm just getting this, we get a kind of collective of human knowledge, of human spiritual upliftment, that will radiate out from these skulls into the group and the city and the planet.
Well, let me put it to you with an analogy.
Yes.
Maybe a lot of people understand. I have taken LSD in my life. I have taken many psychedelics. But I've never gotten as high on any artificial psychotropic or plant chemical substance as I've gotten high being around a bunch of ancient skulls in my room.
Wow. You know, I just saw a stone skull. I was over in England. This guy, Patrice, was there with his stone skull. What do you think of the stone skull?
They're actually stone skulls that are coming out of Mongolia. There were actually Mongolian skulls. There was a Mongolian civilization. The Mongolian desert, like we say, the Sahara Desert, the Libyan Desert, where Giza, where the Great Pyramid is today, is less than 10,000 years. When we talk about the ancient Commission civilization, we talk about lush and green. Same in Mongolia. Once was lush and green and a great civilization. So they carved stone skulls there. I'm not sure that they're ancient, but they are definitely old. They're hundreds of years old with writing on them. We have seen skulls, Alan, in everything you can think of, in lead, in gold, in silver. There is actually for sale a diamond-encrusted skull for $100 million.
Really? A diamond? Yes. You mean there's a skull that's full of diamonds?
Yes.
And what's the vibration of something like that?
Diamond is not a great metaphysical stone. I mean, that's the point. It is the hardest stone, without a doubt. It is the most attractive, why people love it so much, but it is not a spiritual stone. Of course.
Is that a new skull? That skull?
Oh, yes, that's modern. Oh, sure, that's not ancient. The ancient people would have no reason to do that. What? No, the ones we see that are ancient are all quartz. Or amethyst or powerful gemstone.
Have you seen that French guy has, the stone skull?
Excuse me?
Have you seen Patrice's stone skull, the French guy's?
No, I have not.
Okay.
A man named Frank Liu is selling these skulls out of China that are coming from Mongolia, the ones that I'm talking about. Kirby Seed, who is the caretaker of Shana Rao, who is one of Nick Nocerino's most devoted students that will do a wonderful presentation honoring Nick, he has some of these skulls. I don't know if he will be bringing them with him. Well, he has some of these Mongolian skulls.
Kirby's a good friend of mine. He has a beautiful crystal collection in general. But at the conference will be three Mayan elders, like you said, Don Alejandro, Hum Botsman, who's a day keeper, and Don Pedro. Have you met all these three teachers?
I have met neither. I know of the first two. I don't know of Don Pedro. Hum Botsman I knew of. I actually corresponded with him in my first book because we have evidence that a Mayan Indian, Central American indigenous person was living in ancient Egypt 3,300 years ago.
Really?
Yes. That's in my first book, Land of Osiris. And I confirmed that with Hum Botsman. I know of Don Alejandro because he is the head of the whole Quiche Maya of Guatemala. He is a great elder. And I worked with one of his students who's known as Flor de Mayo, who lives in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And she is a great healer, curandera. And she was a student of Don Alejandro's. And I actually passed some information to Don Alejandro, and he confirmed the fact that this Mayan was living in Egypt 3,300 years ago, and he gave a wonderful indigenous teaching. The Maya themselves believe that they come from the Pleiades, and they talk about when they came to this planet, they came to four specific areas of this planet to occupy. One, of course, was Central America and Mexico, and another was Northern Africa.
Mm. Well, part of the reason we want the Mayans at this conference, and Ken was great in putting this together, Kendall Morgan, Oracle Stone Productions, was because of the whole 2012 idea, and you can give your ideas about that, but it does seem like the Mayans predicted the end of a cycle, not the end of the world, but the beginning of a new cycle as well, is marked on December 21st, 2012, when the sun, the earth, and the galactic center come into an alignment. So the crystal skulls, if they've been around this long, have probably encoded in them what the transformations of an age. And I think it's important that the Mayans and the skulls are together for partly that reason.
Absolutely. And the fact of the matter is it's not just the Mayans. It happens to be a teaching of all indigenous peoples on our planet, that we are coming to the end of great cycles now. This, again, was my teacher's teaching, too. We're the end of a great cycle of darkness, which we call the Age of Amun, which has existed for the last 5,000 years, exactly corresponds with the Mayan cycle. And we're coming to the end now to a new dawn. He called it the Awakening. It is exactly what the Mayans are saying. It is not the end of the world, but it is the end of time, supposedly third-dimensional linear time. There's going to be a shift in consciousness. But my teacher always used to say, I had people come to Egypt with me a couple of years ago, and they asked him, I said, Hakim, what do you think of the Mayan date of December 21st, 2012? And he simply said, it means nothing to me because I do not recognize the calendar. However, then he would go on and give a teaching basically saying the same things that the Mayans are saying. We're coming to the end of a great cycle now. So we say it's not going to happen overnight. If people are thinking that at December 20th at midnight, at 2012, it all comes down and it's over in one night, nonsense. And the sinking of Atlantis wasn't in one night either, even though Plato intimates that. It probably took a week or so, at least. But,
or
you know,
at least 40 days and 40 nights of...
The idea, Alan, let me finish my point. The idea now is, it is now. It is now. Every year, our consciousness is shifting exponentially. I tell people when I lecture, and I've seen results of that in the audience, people are going to be waking up in the middle of the night knowing something they did not know before. This is happening continually. Every time I would come back to Egypt when my beloved was still alive, and I would say to him, Hakim, people are waiting for the awakening. When's it going to happen? It seems like so dark now. And he said, well, you know, the old expression is darkest before the dawn. We call this the dawn now. He said, but we are growing every day. We see this, your show, you interviewing me, your, what you do, the people you interview, the many, many people on blog, net, radio now, zillions of people are doing these shows where a show like yours, where I first started doing these things in the 90s, going back to the 80s, there were very few people doing these type of interview shows, maybe one or two. We always talk about, of course, the great Art Bell and Coast to Coast started the trend on radio, on AM radio, and many, many people followed up. But this is the sign. This is the example. It continues to grow every day. So we're not waiting for 2012. It's now. It is now. That's why the skulls are coming now. That is why people are working with crystals. This is why there's such fascination. I tell everybody, which is what I was going to say before, bring your own crystal skulls. Bring your own talismans. Bring your medicine bags to this conference. Put them around, Max. Put them near the skulls. Everybody brings their power tools, their power objects now to get charged by this energy. It is this. We are in this as a group collective. It is not one person alone. We either go together or we don't. Those that are going to be there with the shift will go on and stay maybe in this physical form, but it will be a fourth dimensional consciousness. But those that don't will have to leave this physical plane. This is why there's earth changes. It is not to look at so terrible, to be so fearful. Yes, there's going to be the mother of tsunamis. Yes, there's going to be the mother of tornadoes and earthquakes. It's going to only continue. The oil spill in the Gulf is only one sign of what we're doing to the ecology of our planet, unless we get it together, as the Hopi teach us. If we don't love our Mother Earth and respect natural systems, we will go down. But Hakim, my teacher, was supremely confident that we are not going down, that the shift is now, it is there, it is us. We don't have to wait for December 21st, 2012. It is every day we do what we do to meditate, to keep ourselves in higher consciousness, to open the senses, as we call it. It is happening now.
And so bringing these skulls together, and we'll go through each of the individual skulls that will be there, but collectively, when we go and put these skulls in the same room and have everyone's intent working with these skulls, and hopefully you'll be able to lead people in a way of working with these skulls, and I think we'll have 500 or 600 people there, all with the same intention, we can create a field, and I was going to say that the memories are in the field. There's a new physics of field dynamics, and hopefully we'll create a field that will affect the greater consciousness of humanity, will help uplift them. So
it will, and it can. And
that's part of my intention of helping to create this conference. So
absolutely. And again, Don Alejandro and the Mayans, They are part of what's known as the Indigenous Council of the World. They've been having these gatherings in the last couple of years. Indigenous elders from all over the world have been gathering in different places, and they're opening up these teachings now to the non-initiate. Used to be a lot, Mayan shamans would never talk to white people. They would never give out this information. A lot of indigenous elders would never want to give their true teaching to Hopi, kept their prophecies secret for many years, but they know now. They know from their own teachings, their own channelings, their own understanding, that it's time now that the white people that are coming to now are incarnated ex-Native Americans, whatever. But it is now for everyone. And this is why I give out Rosicrucian secrets, because for years the Rosicrucians had to stay very secret. They had to protect themselves from life, death threats, from the Inquisition. But it is no longer. This is the time. This is why there is no longer to be secret information, secret knowledge. It is to come out to everyone now. And the skulls are tremendous catalysts for that. This is why these gatherings are so great. I wasn't at the one last year, but I'm going to be at the one this year. I hope Kendall will invite me to 11-11, 12-12. I would love to be a part of these from now on, because as you say, we can create a group dynamic, a field, as you say, that can permeate the world, go out for healing, for peace, whatever. I know these things work. I've been part of group dynamics for many years, group meditations, group prayers, whatever you want to call them. Rajneesh used to say that all prayer was outward meditation. All meditation is inward prayer. That's the same thing. We right. can create that dynamic, and we can send it. And there is a collective human field that even if a person is not conscious of it, it can still come into their subconscious.
No, I'm very excited about what we can create together with this field of intention. I think the focus of these skulls is to transmit this knowledge.
Absolutely.
I just would love to, since you're so familiar with the skulls, and you know, I'm getting more and more excited about the whole event as you're talking about it. I think it's really going to be so synergistic and so much more powerful than people can imagine because of this intention there. The 2012, yes. The minds, the skulls.
Absolutely.
You know, so part of, I would just love to review some of the skulls that are going to be there. So the first, if people go to the EdgarCaseyNYC.org website and click on the Crystal Skull event, they can see the whole list of activities that will be happening October 10th, and you can also register.
There also is the website for Oracle Stone Productions, which is www.crystalskullsevent.com.
Right.
Crystalskullsevent.com.
And in both those places, you can buy tickets for the events. We made it very, very reasonable for people, and $150, and I think that's a fantastic price because we want people to be there. We want you to bring your skulls. We want the intentions of your thoughts to help lift the vibration of the planet. So part of who else will be there is Dale Walker and a skull called Amar, right? Or does he have?
No. He's got Rainbow.
Oh, yes, Rainbow. So tell me about Amar, because that's the first listed on the...
Amar, again, there are going to be crystal skulls that I have never seen.
Right.
So Amar is one I have not seen. Synergy is another one I have not seen.
I see Synergy. I love Synergy. I got a very good feeling from Synergy. Is Amar known to be an ancient skull?
Purported to be. You see, this is the point. We have many, many people out there who say they have an ancient skull. Not only that, they say they have one of the original ancient skulls. Sometimes it turns out that the majority of them are modern carved or old.
And how would you know? You have to look at it under a microscope.
No, that's part of it. That's only part of it. This has to be treated from both sides of the brain. As I said, I worked with the two greatest who could walk in both worlds. I can walk in both worlds. I have 3 degrees in the sciences. I am trained as an archaeologist, prehistorian, so I can look at it as an archaeological artifact. However, I've been a mystic on the metaphysical path since the mid-60s. Marcel Vogel was the same.
Okay, so you don't know about Amar, but Amar seems to have a lot of high energy.
I can make a judgment because I have had this great ability to work with artifacts. I have a sense.
Okay.
I can look at the skull and I can see. But to give you a final determination, it has to be tested, has to be studied for a while.
I understand. So the Einstein...
You said Dale Walker.
Dale Walker is going to be there with a skull called Rainbow, right?
Yeah, he was a student of Nick Nocerino's. Nick Nocerino was known as the teacher of teachers. In fact, a lot of Nick Nocerino students went on to become crystal teachers like Dale Walker and write their own books, as Dale did. Rainbow was also found in an archaeological dig near Shana Ra. We know Rainbow. Rainbow's a very interesting skull. I would say most definitely ancient, and it's one that has tremendous power. Beautiful rainbow spectral. You know, like people know if you look through sometimes a piece of good quartz, you see all these prismatic effects. You can see all the colors of the rainbow. So rainbow's a beautiful skull.
Right.
Dale also has two other skulls. One is with his lorry, his ex. It's known as Madre. And there's another skull that Dale has called Zar.
Tell me about Zara. Zar
is a very interesting skull. Zar, I only spent maybe a half an hour with, but I would, you know, go 90% to the way to say it's ancient. Tsar is definitely not carved. You see, again, the intent of the carver. The shaman would pick out the crystal for its intrinsic properties. Why did you say they chose? They would look at the crystal for its power, its intrinsic ability, its ancientness, its ability to store ancient, not because of its aesthetic qualities. Joanne Parks always lectures and talks about Max. She says he is what they would call junk crystal. It's not something. So in other words, the ancient skulls are ugly, usually. They're usually not attractive pieces of crystal. They were not chosen for aesthetics. They were not chosen to be carved. A modern skull, finely polished, beautiful piece of crystal, is carved to be sold purely for aesthetics. The ancient ones were carved to be ritual items, for healing, for storing information. So they would be not aesthetic. And Tsar is a yellowish, cloudy piece of quartz that is not attractive and hollow, totally hollowed out. So there was definitely a ritualistic use of Tsar as a ritual object. And so it's a very interesting skull. I happen to like Tsar, and I'm looking forward to seeing that skull again. I think it is ancient. And Madre is part of these skulls that Dale talks about that has what you call the dolphin nose. It has a very particular nose. We've seen a lot of skulls like this, like a dolphin type on its nose. And he believes they're all ancient. And I again, with Madre, I would lean very far to the fact.
Well, Lori Walker and Madre are both going to be there.
Absolutely. All three of those skulls.
Yeah. This other thing, I mean, we'll go through the rest of the skulls, but you know what? The crystal skulls keepers always talk about these skulls as if they're beings. Like they say the skull is telling me this and that. Well, what do you think of that?
Oh, yes. There's a twofold effect that happens. We don't look at these objects, those that work with them, as an inorganic piece of mineral. They seem to have personalities. In fact, if you notice, most of them have names.
Yes.
So most of the keepers get the names from the skull. Usually the skull will interact with the keeper and tell it its name. Joanne tells a wonderful story how she came up with the idea of Max.
What's that story?
Oh, she used to just call it Rock. She was just a Lutheran housewife, no metaphysical background. It's a long story, but she inherited the skull from a Tibetan Red Hat Lama who was a great healer. Just said to her, "You don't know what this is, but one day you'll know what to do with it." She put it in a box on a shelf in the closet for 10 years, but the skull kept talking to her, kept coming into her dreams, kept trying to communicate with her. And told her that it was important, had to get out of the box, had to work with humanity, and had to find the man. Said there was a man who would know what to do, would tell her, and she thought she was going crazy. She would tell her husband, "Carl, I must be having my head examined. I have a rock in a box with a face on it, and it's talking to me."
And eventually he found Nick Nocerino, right, who told her.
Make a long story short, she saw a special on Houston. She's from Houston, Texas. She saw a television special on a local Houston TV about crystal skulls, and she called up the television station and says, "Hey, I've got one of these." At first they laughed at her. Yeah, everybody's got one of those. She said, "No, I've got a rock with a face on it. I have one of those things." She said, "Well, why don't you call up the Houston Museum? They may tell you what to do with it." Well, she called them up. They didn't know any more than the television station. They didn't know anything. She called the station back up and said, "Well, I called the museum. They didn't know any more than you did, so thanks, but no thanks." She said, "Well, now, wait a minute," they said. "There was a man that we got in touch with for some information and background about our show. He lives in California. We can give you his phone number." She said, "Okay, what's the man's name?" "F.R. Nick Nocerino." She contacted Nick. She tells this story wonderfully. I'll duplicate it at the conference. But she contacted Nick. One thing led to another. He said he'd been looking for that skull since 1949. He knew what that skull was. Jumped on a plane, came to Houston, examined the skull, declared it an ancient artifact, ancient skull that he'd been heard about from 1949. And that started the whole thing. When he left, and she was putting Max, the skull, back in the box, back in the cell, she said, the skull talked to her and said, "Well, woman, well, finally I can get out of this box and you can take me around. And by the way, my name is not Skull, it's Max."
Wow, that's beautiful. Thank
There's
you.
There's more to it, though. The name actually comes out to a Mayan term because more has come out of it. I've contacted one of Don Alejandro's students, a man named Eric Gonzalez, who lives near Mount Shasta, California, was born in L.A., but was a native Guatemalan Maya, became is now a Mayan daykeeper. I said, Max told me a few years ago. See, Max has now become my favorite skull because he put my wife and I together. These skulls are things. They're also matchmakers. My wife and I met at a session with Max in 1997 in Boulder, Colorado. So Max puts us together. We see Max every year. He always tells us, I put you guys together. You need to work together. My wife helped me write my three books. I've helped her write her two novels, et cetera, et cetera. So Max said to me a few years ago, so you know where the name comes from? Max. I said, no. He said, I was saying, I, Max. He said, but it's a Mayan phrase. Look it up. So I wrote it down. I-M-A-X. I, Max. It's Imush in the Mayan language. It happens to be one of the Mayan day glyphs. It means emerging consciousness.
Really?
So this is what the Mayans called him. Imush.
Oh, thank you for that. That's great. Well, what else is going to be there is the Einstein crystal. What do you know about the Einstein crystal?
I think that is Nick Nocerino's also, if I'm not mistaken, have not seen it. So again, this is going to be a discovery for me at the conference. The one I can talk about is E.T. by Yoki Van Dieken.
Yeah, tell me about E.T., yes.
It's a very interesting skull. Only saw it for a little bit. Did not get to handle it or work with it. But Nick Nocerino did, and he leaned very strongly that it's an ancient skull. It is a smoky quartz skull. Very interesting. Has a very high forehead. Seems to look like the so-called ETs, the aliens, and that's why it's been named ET. Very powerful. Has a lot of strong energy.
So okay.
I'm looking forward to seeing that one again.
And we talked about Madre, what you feel was one of the ancient ones as well.
Yes.
And then there's a skull called Maya that's going to be there. What do you know about Maya?
That's Jane Doherty. I don't know about that skull either. So
you haven't met that skull?
No. It's going to be I have tested as many as 4 to 5, seen as many as 9. I would probably say 8 because I don't classify the Mitchell Hedges skull as ancient. So I would say I saw the Mayan crystal skull, amethyst crystal skull, neither of which are going to be at this conference. But the amethyst crystal skull has recently been sold, may surface again. Who knows? It may appear at the 2011 conference. May.
Who had the amethyst crystal skull?
It was in private hands that I did not know. It's been locked up in a vault for almost 20 years, and it's finally been sold.
There's no way to get it to this conference. Would we have any? How do you know it was sold?
That's rumor that comes down the pike. We don't care about it. There's no other information that could come down. But, you know, there is a crystal skull rumor mill. There's the news. There's the hotline. And so these things get passed around among crystal skull people.
So we have Madre, Maya, you don't know, Rainbow we talked about, Shana Ra
for certain, the oldest, perhaps one of the oldest I've ever seen.
And you're saying Shana Ra could be as old as 10,000 years.
Absolutely.
Synergy is going to be there, another skull that I met that's a beautiful skull. She says it comes from the South Pacific, via South America. Does that make sense?
That's quite possible. From what we understand from Peruvian shamans, they don't have a history of Peruvians or ancient pre-Incan people carving crystal skulls. So she is basically saying the skull is Lemurian, coming from the South Sea through Peru. I cannot speak to that one way or another. Again, there's no provenance on the skull. It becomes the story that comes along with the skull. If I can sit and test it, be alone with it, then I can have an idea. But I'm anxious to see it because many people, as you, have gotten very good feelings from that skull and feel that she's doing good work with it, whether it's ancient or not.
Yeah, I did have a really good feeling about that. And we talked about Zod. Now, the other amazing thing that's going to be there is called the Atlantean Orb. Have you seen and met that?
No, there's that one. There is another one, and it is on the website. There supposedly is another ancient skull that is coming out of the jungles of Mexico that's going to be at this conference.
Oh, great.
Not Mayan hands. Kendall has announced it. He doesn't give any other detail, but saying that it is definitely going to be at the conference, a purported ancient Mayan crystal skull.
Oh, this is the mystery skull we've been calling it.
The mystery skull, exactly.
Yeah, so that would be very interesting to get your reaction in meeting a new skull along with some other.
I'm like a kid in a candy shop. I mean, this is all exciting. I mean, as you said, I've been at several of these conferences. The energy, the excitement is so high at these things. It's so tremendous that I tell people that it is great possible for sensory overload, that people who are really sensitive, I tell people, go to the bathroom, splash cold water on your face, make sure you eat. And people, you know, people who do a lot of high energy work, so-called psychic work, usually need to eat chocolate. That's the reason why the Mayans invented chocolate, to ground you from doing a lot of spiritual work. People, the 10 toes, make sure they eat, make sure you go to the bathroom, make sure you throw cold water on your face, because the energy is going to be that high.
Well, don't forget to say that at the conference.
I will. Another person who's going to be at the conference is Jaap van Eaton. Now, he doesn't have any ancient skulls, but he has researched them. He's written a book about them. He's done a lot of great crystal skull work. And he'll be the master of ceremonies, and so maybe we'll have him make these announcements continually.
Great, great. Now tell me about the Atlantean orb, because Arthur Fanning, who got the orb from the guy who took it out of the Costa Bimini, right, called me and told me that the Atlantean orb wanted to speak to me. So wow. That was strange. I mean, that's pretty interesting. What do you know about the orb?
I know the story of it before Arthur Fanning. I really exploded in this scene in the early 80s. So when I was working as a staff research scientist for the Rosicrucian Order, and once we started, I wrote an article about the crystal skull. We got information from Rosicrucians all around the country, and a lot of crystal people. I was actually sent a photograph of it in like 1981. The story is Dr. Ray Brown was a scuba diver, was diving off the coast of Bimini. Supposedly he saw what he claims to be the ruins of an Atlantean pyramid. There was a hole in the top of the pyramid. He dove in and he saw a crystal ball seated on two golden hands. In other words, it was two hands made out of gold, carved obviously out of gold. The crystal was on there. It is a phantom crystal, and that is a crystal ball that has a pyramid in it. I was sent a photograph of it in 1980. I got very interesting reactions from the court. That's the story. Ray Brown found it, claims it's an Atlantean orb, Atlantean crystal. And Arthur Fanning now comes into the story. He has apparently gotten it from Ray Brown.
Well, Ray Brown died, and according to Arthur, and Ray gave it to Arthur before he died to caretake it.
To keep it on. Well, I have a photograph of it.
Okay, but you have not met the orb personally.
This is another thing to look forward to.
Okay, I mean, I think this is going to be like the World Series for anyone interested in any kind of crystal, you know, crystal artifact, anything related to quartz crystal.
The New Age Super Bowl, right?
This is going to be a great gathering, and Michelle Nocerino will be there, the daughter of Nick Nocerino.
Here for saying that Axel Blood, the youngest daughter of Nick and Chris Nocerino, who has taken up the cudgel of her father, is very much like her father. I have not met her, spoken to her on the phone.
I've met her. She's a very, very nice person, very gentle.
She's her father's daughter, so.
Yes, very good. She's a great person, and she really is very much in touch with the stuff. You know, very deep.
About her father. I'm going to talk about her father. We'll have a special presentation about him on Sunday. And so I will talk glowingly about it. Many people will. There'll be other students. Steve Halpern, famous musician, who actually worked with Nick Nocerino with the Mayan crystal skull.
I didn't know Steve worked with Nick Nocerino. Oh, okay.
1979, in fact.
That makes sense. And Kirby Said, who has one of the most amazing crystal collections I've ever seen. I mean, his house in, the East Bay there in California is just full of beautiful, beautiful specimens, you know?
Yes.
Great. So, and then we're going to have opening up the whole event with a unification ceremony and an activation of all these crystals coming together.
Pretty amazing. And so, actually, the day before the conference, the conference technically is October 8th through 11th. The conference itself will be the 9th and 10th. But the 8th, these three Mayan elders who you mentioned are going to speak at the UN.
That's
actually
right.
Going to be recognized as an indigenous nation, and that's one of the first times. And they're going to talk about Mayan prophecies to the United Nations.
Yeah, no, that's really going to be a great day, a great moment. And then the following day, they'll be there helping to open up the unification ceremony. So I think people coming with their own crystals will get a download into their crystals, right?
Yes. And most crystal skull guardians, again, it's up to each guardian, but most like Kirby probably, and certainly like Joanne, and I'm sure that the Sherry Whitfield does too, allows people to put their skulls, their crystals, at least near the skull if right next to touching it. I tell people it doesn't exactly have to touch the skull. All you have to do is be in a skull's auric field, and sometimes that can be 2 to 3 feet circular, a diameter. So you just put your own power stones, your own objects, and they will be charged by the crystal skulls.
And I think my friend Jody Sirota will be there, who usually brings Joanne to New York, and she...
I know Jody too. I've been at the Metis Center. We actually... We were filmed together in February of 2008 by NBC for a sci-fi special on crystal skulls where they used nothing of us. But they did a whole, they filmed Jody's whole ceremony. She had about 110 people with Max. She did a wonderful ceremony. She's very connected to Max. Very connected.
Yes, yes. She has a beautiful little skull herself. Maybe we'll get Jody to do something. Okay, wonderful. Jody, if you're listening there. Then we'll have the coming together of the Eagle and the Condor, the North and South American energies joining there. That's part of a ceremony that we'll do. And then, of course, we'll have different presentations by each of these skull keepers, and you'll do your keynote. And we'll have a closing ceremony on Sunday where I think all these skulls will come together and people will...
And yeah, and there'll also be Steve Halpern making music. There's going to be music with the skulls too. Again, the elements that we learned from both Marcel Vogel and Nick Nocerino, that the skulls are activated by sound, by light, by color, and by breath.
By breath. What do you, by type of breathing?
Exactly. Deep breathing actually into the skull. This is how I will demonstrate this. This is how Marcel Vogel taught us how to dive into a crystal. And I actually observed. I had the wonderful fortune to work with Nick with two skulls. I worked with Vogel with the Mayan skull and the amethyst skull. I worked with Nick with the amethyst skull and watched him work with Shana Ra. So I saw how the masters work. And it was an amazing experience to see Nick Nocerino work with a crystal skull.
And this is all going to be happening at the FIT Auditorium October 9th and 10th. That's also called the John Reeves Great Hall. That's at 28th Street and 7th Avenue in Manhattan, New York City. You can look at the Oracle Stone Productions website. You can look at the newrealities.com website. You can look at the ARE of NYC. That's the Education Association of New York City's website to get tickets for all of these. Only $150 for 2 days of these amazing vibrational artifacts. I mean, I think anyone in the area should definitely be here.
Well, that's exactly, I mean, I can speak to the fact that that's an amazing price. I've been at conferences that were twice, I mean, that price.
Well, exactly, and we wanted this to be quite a jam-packed conference because we know the intention of as many people as we can gather together will shift the field. That's just what we're feeling.
You're absolutely right. And again, this is something that's growing every year. Again, being in the field since 1979-80, there was a rush of energy in the 80s. It died down a little bit in the 90s, came back again in the 2000s. And then all of a sudden, David Childress calls me up in January of 2008 and says, hey, let's write a crystal skull book together because Steven Spielberg and George Lucas are putting out an Indiana Jones movie. And we put our book out in May of 2008 that corresponded with the release of Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. And so now this energy is back again. And now all of a sudden with these conferences, with the Mayan energy coming in now, it's another whole new phase of interest. And so there are all new people now coming in who didn't know about anything in the past and now just suddenly get, I mean, and people tell me these kind of stories all the time. Walk into a crystal shop or just a bookstore that has crystals, not for any specific reason, but all of a sudden look at a shelf, see a small crystal skull, and all of a sudden the crystal skull says, hey, take me home. And what? They do.
Now, I have another question to ask you about some of the crystal skulls in captivity, like the one at the museum, I think, where is it, in Washington, at the Smithsonian, and the one in London at the British Museum. What do you have to say about those?
Well, this is, again, this is going to be my lecture, but we'll just give it a primary. Yeah. There is a backlash now from academia, and the backlash has been led by a woman named Dr. Jane Walsh. She is a resident anthropologist of the Smithsonian Institute. She's been involved with some of this testing of skulls since 1996. Okay. There is a whole story that's going on now. She recently put out an article. I will be beginning my lecture with her article. It is an archaeology magazine. People can download it. Where she recently said that the Mitchell Hedges skull was brought into her on two different occasions. She tested it under scanning electron microscope, did cast molds of the teeth, and came to the conclusion that it is absolutely modern carved because it shows evidence of modern lapidary diamond tool work. In 1996, there was a gathering of crystal skulls at the British Museum. Nick Nicerino was invited. He brought Shana Ra. Joanne Parks was invited. She usually does not travel out of the country. She's only been to England and France once apiece. She came. The skulls were tested, along with the British Museum skull, as you mentioned, which has been part of the British Museum since 1898, purported to be an ancient Aztec skull, along with a huge skull that had been part of the Smithsonian, weighs 40 pounds, supposedly came from a Native American tribe, supposedly ancient. All these skulls were tested with known Aztec skulls, with known modern skulls. Okay, the result, the tests were overrun by a woman named Margaret Sachs. This is important because Jane Walsh did not do any of these tests in 1996. She was there to oversee. She was there because she brought the Smithsonian skull with her, but she was not involved in any of the testing. The agreement that was made with the Nocerino family and with Joanne and Carl Parks for them to bring their skulls to be tested was that they were to receive complete test results. Complete test results from the Smithsonian. This was agreed to.
Okay.
When the test results came back, they did the scanning electron microscope. They did what they call cast molding of the teeth. It was determined that the British Museum skull, the Smithsonian skull, along with the Aztec skull and a couple other skulls they had, were modern carved. They were, as they said, forgeries. They were not.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
When it came down to Max and Shana Ra, they had no comment. Joanne Parks, who was a living witness to that, and to Nick Nocerino, who told me this personally. Nice. Now, what's the scientific answer is that? Either you have test results or you do not. Either the skull was shown to be modern carved or there was no modern tool marks and it could not be identified. No comment? What does that mean? Then they came back and later said the test results were flubbed. They didn't get good results. They couldn't come up with conclusions. Well, why didn't they test it again? No. No comment. But now, Jane Walsh is saying now, in 2010, that in 1996, Margaret Sachs tested Max and Shana Ra and said that they were modern carved.
I see. Okay, that clears up some of that.
The Nocerino family and the Parks family had never received any test results from the British Museum. Jane Walsh is a liar. And I say that here on the air. I will say it from the stage in New York.
And where is she now, Jane Parks?
She's a resident anthropologist at the Smithsonian to this day.
Oh, really? To this day?
And she's writing articles. She wrote an article in the Washington Post in 2008 where she said Max was modern. She said Max is as modern as the rest. That is a direct quote. She said that Max and Shana Ra were tested by the British Museum and shown to be modern. Well, where the hell are these test results?
I see. Okay, now we should wrap it up, but it's been fascinating.
This will be the thrust of my lecture. What is an ancient skull? What are these skulls? And who is being honest, academia? Or, again, you have people in the metaphysical world who are saying there are people going around. Nick Nocerino told me, beware of anybody who could just look at a crystal skull and say it is ancient.
So. Beware, but you said that's also what psychics or sensitives can do. They can tune.
Yeah, but that's the question of channeled material. That is a question. I've worked professionally with so-called channels. I always tell people you take channeling with large doses of salt. If it resonates with your own inner knowing, keep it. It's valid. If it does not, it is meaningless. It is just someone else is filtering through their own ego mind. And I know that. Okay. I know that there are people who can receive genuine transmissions.
I do agree with you on that. I've seen lots of channeling. I've seen the best and probably the worst. So we said
the skulls have to be tested. That's all. They have to be tested, and there is definite metaphysical, parapsychological ways to test. And
right. But I want to ask you, sort of in closing, what, or it could have been an opening question, what is your particular fascination with the skulls? Why you? What is it? What does it say to you?
They are a direct physical evidence that we are more than we are taught we are. That we are multifunctional, multidimensional beings. As you said, the crystal skulls seem to have a personality, but they seem to be something else involved. They are interdimensional portals. They can prove to someone who works with them that consciousness is more than physical, that we are more than physical beings. That is the lesson that they have taught me. They are great tools to raise consciousness, tools for healing, and for making us understand that we are more than the body.
Well, how did they make you understand that? How did you get that working with the skulls? What did
it's
you
It's a matter of experience. It's a matter of experience.
What was your experience? What was the...
I'm not a visual person. I can feel energy.
What did you feel? Tell us, what was your of being a multidimensional being?
Working with the amethyst crystal skull, I saw technicolor movies in my mind. I saw scenes of ancient Egypt that were not written in any book. This is in 1983. They were not validated until I met my teacher in 1992, that I was seeing scenes of ancient Egypt over 10,000 years ago.
Via the skull.
Via the skull.
But the skull wasn't Egyptian. The skull was Mayan.
But the skull downloaded that information from somewhere.
So the skull may have been around...
Or it may have been with an object that downloaded that information into it. But it showed me those scenes. They are part of the Akashic record. Again, with the idea that an ancient skull puts you in an interdimensional space where you can view as what's called the Akashic record, where you can see everything that's ever been, every person that's ever been. They're all recorded in these things, and we can actually get into the etheric record, actually see. And that's, again, people have seen so much about Atlantis and these skulls. That's why there's such a connection to Atlantis. People have seen the destruction of Atlantis. They've seen the fact that the Atlantis was a crystalline technology. Again, I say it was all these ancient cultures. Kemet worked with crystal too. The Great Pyramid works with rose quartz crystal. The ancients knew about the use of crystal. That's why there is a connection with the two things I talk about. People say, well, you talk about ancient Egypt and crystal skulls. Chris Nocerino, Nick's widow, said to me when I wrote my book, I want to see how you tie in the crystal skulls to ancient Egypt. Well, I do, because the ancient Egyptians knew about crystal, as did the Mayans, as did the ancient Atlanteans and Lemurians, whatever you want to talk about.
But the Egyptians didn't know about the skull part, right?
If they did, we don't know. It may be that the ancient Egyptians had crystal skulls too. They are popping up all around the world.
What was strange about the Egyptian Mayan connection is the figures called the Chacmols that seem to exist also in Egypt. The little altar settings in the shape of a kneeling person. Did you notice that?
Yes. Well, we also have Egyptian glyphs in Mayan temples.
Egyptian glyphs in Mayan temples. Where's that?
Mayan day glyphs. If you look in my book, Land of Osiris, you have Mayan day glyphs in a temple at Saqqara that's 5,000 years old.
You do. Mayan day. So getting back to the
proof. I have actual physical proof that there was a Mayan living in Egypt 3,300 years.
You have physical proof of that?
Yes.
What kind of proof is how?
Ceiling glyphs. They're in my book, Land of Osiris. They're pictures were shown to Hunbat's men. He verified it. He actually said he could read some of the glyphs. The photographs were also shown to Don Alejandro. He verified that it was an ancient Mayan language.
Well, this is amazing. Maybe we should get some Egyptian stuff at the conference, too. I don't know. Well, you'll be there.
I'm there.
You're the Egyptian connection.
I carry it with me as my legacy.
Do you have a website as well?
The website I would like to do is I am actually leading tours to Egypt. So anybody who's interested, I always say to people, come see. I have a tour. Quickly, it's called Sacred Earth Journeys. It's sacredearthjourneys.ca because it's Canada, out of Vancouver. I'm leading a tour to Egypt October 17th to 29th. In fact, the week after the conference, with all that energy I'll have, I'm going off to Egypt.
Well, that is great. No, that's going to be really, really fun to be with you in Egypt and all the knowledge you have of Egypt. So, again, this is a conference that my guest here, Steve Mailer, will be one of the keynote speakers at. It's called The Legend of the 13, a two-day ceremony and lectures about the 13 crystal skulls. I don't know if we'll have 13 totally, but there'll be a lot of these.
More than 13. There'll be more than 13
skulls. We'll have lots of crystal skulls there, but it would be great to have the ancient 13 there, but there'll be Mayan elders there, Humbatzman, Don Alejandro, Don Pedro. I think it's going to be an amazing, amazing time. Plus, with all the input, everyone bringing their skulls, it's going to be quite exciting, quite high energy.
I'm certain of it.
Well, thank you, Steve. I really appreciate your insight and your enthusiasm about this subject.
Thank you for the interview. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, is there any final words that you... I think, you know, there's always a lot more to say, but anything final you would like people...
Just what you really said, tell people to come, and if you can't do the 2 days, there's one-day prices. There may be even half-day prices. I think they're going to work with people, whatever your budget is, either come for a half-day, 1 day, 2 days. Come to this conference. It will be a never-to-forget experience.
It will be a never-to-forget experience, and it is only $150 for the 2 days. And we hope everyone will be there. It's going to be at the FIT Auditorium, October 9th and 10th. Look at ARENYC, that's the Edgar Cayce Center of New York. Look at their website. Look at newrealities.com. Look at Oracle Stone Productions under the Crystal Skull event. And you can get tickets there. You can also email me at newrealities@earthlink.net to find more about the conference or to order tickets. I'm talking to Stephen Mailer, who's going to be a presenter at the conference. Thank you for listening to be archived on the New Realities website, also on BBS Radio. And thank you all for listening. And we'll go out with this song by Duke Williams called The Night Before the Future.